I'd love to do it.
Hello, this is Susie with Scarlet Leadership Institute. Welcome to our monthly Leadership Lunch and Learn call. You are all muted at the moment, but at any time you may press *7 to ask a question or join us online, and you can send a question at any time. There's a link on our homepage, scarletleadership.com, that'll take you directly to the website if you'd like to ask a question. Again, thank you for joining us, and here's Joe Scarlett.
Well, again, welcome to our monthly conference call. We're thrilled you're with us. Before we get started, a few topics. Our signature executive program, our first one for this year, is going to kick off on February 21st. We have about half the class enrolled today, and if you're interested, go to our website, scarletleadership.com, or possibly to your HR department. They probably have information about it also. Our topic next time on February 13th, mark it in your calendar, will be strategic planning, and we will have Andy Bailey with us. Today's topic is presentation skills. Mimi Bliss, who has done many, many classes for us and is a real pro in the area of public speaking, is with us today, and I'll introduce her in a few moments. But first, a few editorial words from me about public speaking, and I know that that a lot of people are terrified about standing up in front of a group, and you're no different than I was years ago. It's difficult the first time you do it, and we're all nervous, but think of it, it's a journey. It's not a destination, it's a journey. It's like any other skill in life. The more you do of it, the better you'll get at it. And just practice makes perfect. Practice, do it again. The next time you do it, you'll get a little more comfortable, and the next time a little more comfortable. And you'll never be 100% comfortable, but it's one of those things that when you think about your growth as a leader, your growth as an executive, being able to communicate in front of a group is an essential skill. If you continually work at it and continually practice and continually take every opportunity you can, you will get better, and you'll get better and better and better, and someday you'll be fabulous at it. So with that, I want to turn it over to Mary Fink, our hostess. Mary?
Thanks, Joe. And as Joe said, there are a few things that strike terror in our hearts more than knowing that we have to stand up and speak in front of a group. Some of us do it all the time, and we still get nervous about it, and I think that's a good thing. I think we have to keep our nerves. That's what gives us the good edge. But I think we do get comfortable with it, and knowing the things to do that can create a good presentation can be part of that comfort level for us. So today we have with us Mimi Bliss. As Joe said, has spoken to many of our classes, teaches many of our clients, and is a master speaker herself. So she is here to share some of her wisdom with us. And Mimi, tell us just a little bit about your background.
My background's in television. I was a TV reporter for a number of years, so I was one of those people on days like today who was out on the bridge in the cold in the windbreaker saying, "It's cold." And as I walked in the building today, I thought, oh, I'm so glad to be walking into a warm building. So I was a TV reporter for a number of years and then worked as a corporate spokesperson, and it is easier sometimes to ask questions and to answer them. And I have been doing this kind of work for 15 years. And I sum it up as I work with folks on how to speak with confidence and credibility, whether you're giving a speech, making a presentation to a board of directors, dealing with a crisis, or doing a media interview, being on television. And that forms you. I may work one-on-one with someone. I may speak to a group to 150 about how to talk to the media. We're here at Scarlet with the leadership programs. We often work in small groups and look at what do we need to take our speaking skills to the next level to help us in our overall careers.
Great. We're going to talk about three or four topics specifically today, but I want to start with the one that I think will give us the most benefit, and that is how do we organize our presentation? It's so good if we know when we stand up exactly how we're going to start, where we're going to go from there, and how we're going to end, but what are the steps to getting there?
Yeah, and I worked yesterday. I met with a chief financial officer who I've been working with over the last few months, and I always ask people, like, what was helpful? You know, what is helping you? You say, you know, we're getting a lot of feedback, it's better. And his response is something I hear a lot, which is structure. I know all this stuff. It's really easy to lose the forest for the trees. But when I'm speaking to a group, particularly sometimes at senior management, board of directors, but any group, I've got to have a structure. And I call it the four-step outline. Step one is connect with your audience. Set the stage that this is relevant to them. You're here for them. This is going to help them do their jobs better. Or if you're speaking to your boss, hey, you're aware of the strategic direction that has been set for the company in your department. So what you're about to talk about fits into that strategic direction. So number one, connect. Number two, make your point. If it takes us too long to get to the point we're going to make, our audience gets lost. They may interrupt. And if we can't focus on our point, they will never figure it out. So that's if you can get right to the point. And then what we tend to do, and I'm right there with you, is then go into a laundry list of activities. Like we're updating on a project, and I give them the 15 things I've done in the last month, like 8 phone calls, the papers I've filled out, the things I've done, the meetings I've attended. No one cares. So you want to give your point and then give a concrete example of why this is the most important thing. I talked to a CEO recently, and she called it the color commentary. They can read the page. They can read the financials. She, as a boss, can understand this. She needs to know something that's not on the piece of paper. Tell her something concrete that reinforces the point. Then, that's number three. So number one, connect. Two, make your point. Three, give a concrete example. Four, tell me what happens next. And again, I get a lot of feedback from clients is that's where they find, we all find ourselves rambling. So just go to, well, here's the next step, or here's what I recommend. Here's what I need from you.
Okay. Here's what I need for you to do.
Exactly.
Make the ask, right?
Make the ask.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What about some of the other components of a presentation? Voice quality or voice variation, pitch or whatever, body language, pauses?
Couple things, and something you were in the room, Mary, a couple months ago. We were working with a group, and the president of the organization was there, and we were talking about voice. And he said, you know, he said, I sit in meetings all day long with people trying to get me to do stuff. They might be a supplier. They might be someone in the company. They want me to approve things. And he said, I try to pay attention. He said, but I tell you, if the voice is kind of flat, it's tough. You know, it really makes a difference if you speak with energy and you're engaged. So we encourage folks to do that. And what I find is that it's not as easy as just saying, smile. It's how you sit. If you look at Joe, for example, sitting, he's speaking, you can't see him, but he is not leaning back, slumped over the chair, feet on the table kind of thing. He's sitting back in his chair, leaning in, shoulders back, engaged. So how you are seated, your physical posture makes a difference. If you are standing, it all begins with your feet. The first thing we do when we are nervous is we shift our weight and we lean and we kind of
sway.
Yes, that's it. It sway from side to side. So get your feet in a good solid foundation. Stand still for a little while. Don't shift your weight. Low open gestures will relax your face and energize your voice. As you get more comfortable, we make gestures that are more purposeful. But clasping our hands can really cause tension. And something we've seen a lot of is hands kind of tentative little gestures. And that's something you want to avoid as well.
A couple of other little thoughts along the way. Smile. You know, don't look terrified. Look like you're enjoying what you're doing. Look like you're engaged in your business. And if you're take your watch off. Put your watch somewhere else. There's nothing worse than being halfway through a presentation. Somebody looks at their watch. You may remember when George Bush Sr. did that in the middle of a debate, a presidential debate one time years ago, and it was one of the things that did him in. So get rid of your watch. And if you're standing up in front of a group and you got a bunch of change in your pockets, get rid of it before you get up there, because I've seen people stand in front of a group and they start jiggling the change in their pocket, which is, so just focus on what you're saying. You know your material. Look alive. Give it some real clear presentation and look like you're enjoying yourself.
Well, and really be enjoying yourself. And that's what I was going to say, Mimi, about the energy piece. It's really hard to have energy when you're not passionate about it yourself. So if I can work myself up into some excitement about this topic, then it's going to come through in my voice. And it's going to be much more appealing to the audience than it's going to be if I'm just standing up there doing something rote.
You know, I see that all the time, because if we try to memorize something or stick to, you know, talking points or messages or marketing language, we flatten right out. But when someone says, hey, and someone said this to me, I was working with a group on Tuesday, and he was a little flat, and he said, you know, I've been doing this 24 years, because I love this brand. And everyone in the room sat up. I'm like, we got to get to this stuff. You have credibility, 24 years, and you love this brand. Tell me more.
Yeah, why? Tell me.
It's the example. So that's going and talk about, instead of saying nice things about yourself, say what your customers tell you.
Right.
The good stuff.
Right.
Your employees. Quote them. And Mary's right. The other thing I've noticed in terms of confidence and voice, and Joe and I saw this for several years with the executive program, is with people were ending, they would do presentations in front of the group, and they were ending on kind of a down note. They would end and go, thank you for your time. And lose their, and Joe started giving them advice, and everything improved.
It's like running for the door. You want to you want to end on a high note. And one of the most frustrating things you see in speakers is they don't have a clear ending and a clear beginning and a clear ending. And you really want to start, you know, get your first few sentences down pat, and get your ending down pat. And you want to end on a high note with some passion for your topic. I can tell you as a former CEO. One of the things that used to drive me crazy is too much detail. You want to come in with a clear message. You know, here are my two or three key points, and here's what I need to get done, and here's the decision I need if that's the case. And stay at a high level. You know the details. Keep them in the background. Stay at a very high level in any presentation you're doing, no matter who it is. And you can always drill down into details, but if you start off with too many details, you drive people crazy, and that's when the eyes glaze over, as Mimi was talking about with this president she was working with a couple of weeks ago. So just keep things simple and keep them to a high level. Also, another very something you should never do is a handout in a meeting. If you're running a meeting or giving a speech, the handout should be emailed a couple of days ahead of time or given out afterwards. But if you hand out, if you distribute a handout and then start talking, you know, who are they going to listen to? Are they going to listen to you, or are they going to read the handout? More often than not, they'll be reading the handout. So a good rule of thumb in any business meeting, if you have the option, is no handouts. Either if you want people to read stuff, send it to them ahead of time and ask them to read it before they get there.
Can you, and this came up in a meeting recently, how often, as an executive, how far in advance do you want materials sent to you?
Usually a day, half a day, just enough chance for me to read them if you want me to read them. Usually, you want people to read them afterwards as opposed to before, particularly if you're supporting data for whatever your topic is.
Exactly. Is there anything that you shouldn't say? Are there any things that you should avoid?
In things to avoid, you mean sort of places to go? Yeah, I see what you mean. Something I hear a lot is what I call minimizing language. And the first one that comes to mind is a little bit. It is so easy to do it. I'm going to tell you a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit. And you'd be amazed how many people who are just really confident and successful come into a room and say, well, we'll talk a little bit about. We're immediately saying, well, it's not really that important. Yeah, you can go back to your iPhone or your smartphone or whatever. Mm-hmm. Confident language, I think, is a common one. It's more, I recommend, you know. If we didn't have confidence in you, you wouldn't be asked to present.
Exactly.
So, and then the other one is at the ending, we saw a It used to be a lot in the executive leadership programs, people ending with, thank you for your time, I really appreciate it. And as soon as Joe said no, end with, here's what I'm asking for, it was like night and day.
And keep the energy right to the very last word, because so many times we'll hear the end of the sentence sort of fall.
That's very common, too.
Or the end of the presentation, just sort of, as you said, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. How fast can I get off the stage and back to where I was going?
And that comes to practicing aloud. When I worked in television, you know, we did a lot of live television. Could be a bad weather day, or could be politics or government or who knows what. And I found, you know, with live TV, you have to know the first thing you're going to say, and you have to know the last thing. You need to know where you're going to end, because you only have a brief period of time. If I knew the first thing and the last thing, I was okay. If I wrote things down, like word for word notes, and I kind of looked at it, and then I just sort of sat there and stared around waiting for my time to go, that's when I stumbled.
Mm-hmm.
But if I practiced aloud, just say it aloud, it's like it becomes imprinted on your brain and it just comes out. There's my rule of thumb when I watch folks is the second time you practice aloud, your presentation is twice as good and half as long.
Exactly.
Some of the best feedback I give is someone runs through something, I say, yeah, that was good. Let's do it again. I give them zero feedback, nothing. And it's much better, and it's much shorter.
Right, exactly.
No matter what you're preparing, we almost always by nature put much more information into a presentation than we need to. I'll tell you a story. It's almost 20 years old now, but when we were taking our company public in 1994, the two fellows who were with me and I, we put together a slide tray with 80 slides in it, and we thought we had a cool presentation. And we went up to New York to work with this executive coach that the investment bankers had hired, and he said, "Okay, boys, so let's just videotape a few minutes of your presentation." And he gave us two or three minutes worth of videotaping each of us, and then we were forced to watch ourselves and realize that we were absolutely terrible. And we spent the rest of the day turning this monotonous presentation that we'd put together, cutting it down in size. We threw away 60 of the 80 slides and cut the presentation down to about 15 crisp minutes. And all of a sudden, it was like a different presentation, and we were different people. And the coach we coaching was great, but watching yourself on videotape was equally great. And we changed the presentation, and we went out on the road, and we were oversold by a factor of six. So I think we did a pretty good job in the presentation. But, you know, practicing and looking at yourself, I used to, before making speeches to our sales meetings, I used to in a hotel room, I'd go into the bathroom, look at the mirror, and start delivering my speech to the mirror, and you listen to yourself, and you keep refining what you're doing, you keep getting better and better. So wherever you get an opportunity to look at yourself, to record yourself, either in video or audio, do it, because it helps you get better and better and better.
It does, Joe. And I want to say one more thing about video, and that is, not only is it good for helping you figure out what you need to do differently, it's also confidence building, because I may think, oh my gosh, my knees are knocking and my hands are shaking and I'm as nervous as I can be. Rarely does that come across to the audience. And by videoing yourself, you see that it's not nearly as bad as you feel inside, and it helps your confidence.
I've seen, too, when I work with folks, I give them a DVD when we're finished, and I always tell them, you know, you can use it as a Frisbee, or you can watch it. I'd love to have you watch it. And the people who really just immediately, you know, within a matter of a month or something, really ratchet up their presentations and get great feedback are the people who said, I put it in the computer or I took it home and I watched it. And I learned from it. And they said it was painful, but it's not so bad now because I've gotten better.
Right.
Those are the people who really, really are able to fairly quickly make a difference in their presentation skills, is they just bite the bullet and they watch.
That's exactly right. I want to say one more thing about organizing the presentation, and then we'll move on. But everything around you in the presentation influences how well you do as well. So I think we all have our practices, our habits that we do before we present. Getting to the arena or the venue, whatever it is, early and knowing what's going on, meeting the people that are doing audiovisual if somebody's doing that, taking an opportunity to meet some of the people in the audience so they're not all strangers out there. Anything else about that?
I think it really helps to talk to people, introduce yourself to people, make a connection. It will help you feel more comfortable, and people will respond.
Right.
The other thing is to check microphones, AV, that kind of stuff. I learned that lesson the hard way, far more often than I care to admit.
For years and years, I made presentation to investors all over the country in groups of 20 to 100, and I would always walk in. I'd always be there early, and I'd shake hands with everybody I could and ask them if they were holder of the stock or they interested and so on. And it made a difference in how the audience reacted to me, because they immediately felt a connection to the speaker, and I felt a connection to them, and it made things run much more smoothly. And the more comfortable you are with the environment, the more comfortable you are in speaking. Another point I want to make about, you know, when you're speaking, you think that you sound crackly and you're nervous and you think your knees are knocking and so on. But what you feel, other people can't see. And so you think you're doing it, this is wrong and that's wrong and so on. The others are not wrong. Another point I want to make is, you know, if you miss a point in your talk, unless it's a numbered point, don't worry about it, because nobody in the audience knows what you're talking about either. So if you were going to make 5 points and you skipped one, it's no big deal, because people in the audience probably don't understand what points you're going to make anyway.
Exactly. So we've organized our thoughts. We've gotten ourselves organized for a presentation. There are lots of different kinds of presentations. And one that I'd like to talk to you about, because I think it's one that almost everybody experiences from time to time, is presenting up, is making a recommendation to my boss, to senior leadership, to somebody like that, And I think some things are a little bit different about that because, for one thing, senior leadership doesn't want a lot of details. They don't want to spend a lot of time. But what would you say about that?
You know, I always pick up on what Joe said, which is less. Keep it high level. They don't need to be walked through the minutia. And we had one of the senior executives involved in the Signature Executive Program a few weeks ago. He said, less is more. Three words, less is more. And so it comes back to that outline. Connect quickly. Why is this relevant to their role in senior management or as a member of the board? How does this tie into the overall strategy? What's your point? Then I really, and I tell folks this so often, is that you don't need to explain the financials to them. They understand how to read that. They know what's on that piece of paper. Mm-hmm. They can read the chart. Tell them what they don't know because they're not in there in the trenches with you every day. So that's where give them something that really brings it to life that they don't know
right. And
very clearly make that recommendation.
Exactly.
And then the thing to avoid is that laundry list because that really, that will prompt an interruption.
It not only will it prompt an interruption, it usually prompts confusion because the CEO or senior executive you're presenting to doesn't understand the details, doesn't want to understand the details, and if you start presenting them, then you get into a conversation about the details that he didn't want to understand or she didn't want to understand in the first place, and you wind up getting way off course. So stay at the very highest level possible, knowing that if you need to drill down to the details, you know what the details are. But generally speaking, I see probably the biggest mistake I have seen in making presentations to senior management is not sticking with the big picture, getting immersed in too much junk that is really sort of peripheral to the main subject.
And I think the mistake we often make is we start with the PowerPoint slides, and we start with making slide after slide. And I love Joe's example, 80 turns into 20.
Oh, yeah.
And so often in a perfect world, we think, oh, wait, what's our message? What will we say? Spend our time there, then plug in a few slides, and we save a lot of time that we can use for practicing.
Exactly.
Let me give you some words. You are the message. Not the slides. You're the message, and don't bore people with reading slides. You deliver the message that's important to for people to hear.
Exactly. And if I've got 15 minutes of a CEO's time and I can finish in five,
do
I'm
it.
A hero.
They love you. They love you.
I'm amazed. That's my mantra. I don't know from the last year is 5 minutes or less. I'm just convinced we do so many of these that almost anything can be communicated in less than 5 minutes.
Right.
And people love you for it.
They do.
Yeah, and anytime you're running any meeting or giving any talk, you know, whatever the schedule is, end early and they love you, take longer and they hate you.
Exactly. Mimi, one of the things that we've had people call us about and say, you know, I really need help with conference calls. You know, we tend to think of them as informal. We tend to think of them as show up at the time, make the call, and go where it goes. Any advice about that?
Well, what we found, and we've done some of this with clients, I have one client I do a lot of work with on webinars, is have a structure. Mm-hmm. Have an agenda in advance. And at the beginning, go boom, boom, boom. Here's where we're going. Get their attention. And the voice is critical. People who do well on conference calls say, I sit up straight. I sit up like I'm on television.
Energy.
I stand up. Keep them alive with your voice.
Exactly. Okay.
Well, also on conference calls, if you're running a conference call where you want people to participate, which is often, let them participate. But also, if you're the leader, you've got to take charge and don't let people ramble on and on and on and on.
Right. That's one of the things that makes conference calls so intolerable. I know that when Joe starts talking, it's going to be 6 or 7 minutes, and so I'm going to hate that. So can you be sort of the leader like you would be in a meeting? You're the leader. You're the head of the group. And so bring it back around to its logical conclusion in a very efficient manner.
I would like to add something else here. We talked about setting a structure for a conference call. It's like any meeting. You set the structure. Now, if you're the leader, if the best way to do this is to circulate the agenda ahead of time, and establish some time for it, give people a chance to tell you what they think, and then you start the meeting. They have an agenda that says you're going to do this at 9, you're going to do this at 9:10, you're going to do this at 9:20, and at 9:30 it's over. If everybody understands that, it makes it easier for you to control the situation. I want to tell you an interesting story, if I can have a minute here. I was the chairman of the Retail Industry Leaders Association, and in my first meeting as chairman, I decided since it was an unpaid job, the worst they can do is fire me. And so I set an agenda for the meeting, and I put times on the agenda, which my predecessor had never done. He just sort of let people talk and talk and talk. And we had people in there who were the CEOs of the biggest retailers in the country, and I was – Tractor Supply was a very small one. But I took charge of that meeting, and when people started rambling, I politely had them, you know, told them the time's up, and we moved on. And I probably ruffled some feathers, but you know what? At the end of that meeting, the CEOs of almost every one of those companies came to me and said, Joe, thank you for respecting our time. So whenever you're in charge of a conference call or a meeting or anything like that, be respectful of people's time. It earns you respect.
Absolutely. It does. So another question that we often have is, how do I handle Q&A? I've done my presentation. I'm feeling pretty good about it. And then someone from the audience asks a question that just sort of deflates me, or it's a question that I wasn't prepared for, or it's a question that I was hoping I wouldn't get. And how do I handle that?
This comes up a lot. I would say two things that we focus on. One is how we ask for questions. I have found if you just go, any questions? There are two things happen. You really get any questions about anything, or more likely, there are no questions. So it is helpful to be more specific. Do you have any questions about my recommendation and how this would work once we implement it? Mm-hmm. So be more specific. They can still ask about what they want. You're still being nice and
sure.
Open, but be more specific. It makes it easier. But also have a plan. Have a game plan for the questions. What's your message? How are you going to handle it? About 5 years ago, I was doing crisis communications training with a company, and this is where, okay, bad things have happened. Something has blown up. You have done something terrible. Something terrible has happened to you. The media is on your doorstep, and you're doing a news conference and looking at microphones. And we focus on how do you answer those questions. And afterwards, the president said, you know, we ought to do this with my direct reports on how to handle those employee meetings. and it gave me an idea, and we do this in the leadership program now, is a half day just on handling difficult questions, whether it's internal, external, community meeting, whatever it may be. And the first thing is really to have a game plan, not to let the questions just pull you left and right. Be responsive, but focus, bring it back to, you know, what is our big picture here? What's our goal? Don't get dragged into the weeds of he said, she said.
Right. And don't repeat negatives.
Yeah. If a question is, well, gosh, you know, it seems like we just dropped the ball here. Your first thing is to say, no, we didn't drop the ball. What do you hear?
Drop the ball.
You know, what we're really focused on as a company is go broad. A perfect example was a woman, this is a couple years ago, in one of the leadership classes. Her topic for her Q&A, where she would take questions from other people and practice handling them, was they had done like a market study on wages and found that certain classifications of employees in the company were overpaid compared to the market. So they weren't going to get a raise that year. And she was going to have to talk about that at a meeting. I mean, everyone in the room just looks at her and goes, ooh, that's bad. You know, that just sounds so heartless, doesn't it? What she said is, we are a conservative company, and that is why we have been successful for so many years. We have never had a layoff, because we operate conservatively. You have a lot of job security here. And so we want to make sure that we're able to maintain that. And that's why we're constantly analyzing our salaries and making sure we're in line. Well, that's a totally different thing, isn't it?
I can't disagree with any of that.
Of course she can't. She brought it back to their core values of a conservative company that has gone umpteen years, and this was decades and decades, without a layoff.
Right.
You need to step back before you take the bait.
What if I don't know the answer? What if I don't have an answer?
It is okay to say, I don't know. The worst thing we can do is guess or speculate. Now, it's hard to say, well, I don't know. So what I suggest is say, you know, I want to make sure that you get the right information. I want you to get the right information. So let me check, or I'll double check on that. Let me talk to the experts, and I'll get back to you. It's the same thing as saying, I don't know, but it sounds more informed.
Right.
And no one wants false information.
Exactly. Excellent. And I think your point of make the point again and again,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sometimes whatever the question is, you can get back to your point.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to do. You want to reinforce what it is that you talked about in your presentation to begin with.
Absolutely. Nothing's changed just because we're in Q&A. We want to be responsive to questions, but we don't want to be pulled down the garden path because someone may have an agenda. Another thing that comes up a lot that can get us off track is when we're asked to speak for others. Well, gosh, it sounds like you're, you know, someone says Well, this sounds great. If you're doing such a good job, then why do you think so many people out there are complaining? What's their motivation? That is a trap you do not want to fall in.
Exactly.
You can. I always just say, you know, I just couldn't speak for others. Because otherwise you're going to say, well, you know, people don't like change. They're not educated about the situation. You see how bad it's getting.
Exactly. And all you have to do is memorize that phrase.
I can't speak for others. What I can tell you is.
Exactly. Exactly. So Q&A is really important because you want to maintain whatever momentum you had in the presentation. And hopefully you have. So, is it any different if the media is there? I mean, what happens when it's a media event?
It is a little different in that when you were doing a media interview, you were typically edited. Or if it's a live interview, which is far less often, it's quite short. So we do want to be careful not to say things that maybe in the context of a 20-minute conversation are great, but taken out of context could not be so good. So I think the first thing to understand is how reporters do their jobs. You know, having been a reporter for a number of years, you know, I'm not usually out to get you, but I'm not out to make you look good. I mean, that is not my job to be your personal promoter and, you know, look at an interview you did and go, well, gosh, that's a great quote. But, you know, maybe his boss wouldn't like that. Maybe I shouldn't use that one. I just don't think like that. I'm looking,
right.
What kind of story here is going to be of interest to the people watching television or reading the paper or going online? I am working for the audience. And I'm also concerned about deadlines. You know, I'm very speedy. Things have changed so much in the last few years. Reporters are constantly updating information for Twitter and Facebook and the website. It is a constant flow of information. So we want to constantly be monitoring what is out there to make sure it's correct. And the first thing, if you're doing a media interview, is to prepare. Think about, I can't say everything. I can't, you know, quote, educate the reporter. I can make a few key points. I can draw attention to them by using flags. Things like, well, what our customers tell us, in my experience, what this means for people. That'll get you every time. You know, well, what this means for people in this, you know, in the Middle Tennessee region, or what this means for people in the Southeast, or wherever you may be, that will get my attention. So draw attention to my main points. And just like in a presentation, use examples and analogies. I was just this morning getting ready for a media training tomorrow, and I'll see something good, and I'll go, ooh, I like that one. And a couple things on my handout. One was someone was talking about electronic health records. And one of the concerns there is, oh, my gosh, my private medical information is out there floating around. And so I was working with a company, and they said, well, you know, we will keep your health information safe and secure. Our goal is to be the Fort Knox of electronic health records. It just gave you a visual, didn't it? The
yes.
Fort Knox.
It I feel better already.
I know. So give specific examples there. And finally, be concise. Where we tend to make a mistake is we keep talking and talking and talking, and somewhere at the end we say what we didn't mean to say.
Exactly. And one more thing about working with the media, often they'll call you and say, I'm on deadline. If we can remember, it's their deadline, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I still need to go through these preparations before I just speak.
That's a great point. And I've been a reporter. I am just thrilled to have you on the phone. And there is no way I'm going to let you off. So I just start asking questions. That is my job. What I always recommend to folks and what I do is use what's called a hold response. I say, gosh, thank you for calling. I'm happy to help you. Tell me more about what you're looking for so I can better help you. Stop talking. Fill the silence. Find out where they're going. You may or may not be the correct person to talk to. You may be able to direct them to someone else. You may have to look something up. Find out what's going on. And I ask that open-ended question, tell me more about what you're looking for, and not, well, submit your questions in writing and we'll think about it. That just sets up hostility and you may lose
right.
a good opportunity. So I gather some information. Then I make sure I have their contact information. How do I reach you? What's your email, your phone? And I say, you know what? I'm happy to help you. I want to make sure I give you the right information. Let me check on some things. And why don't I call you back at X time? And X time, you know, X time is not next week or tomorrow. It may be an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Or I say, you know, I'm not sure I'm the right person. Let me check around. I'll call you back. Tell them when. The other thing, sometimes I feel silly saying that. Like, it's obvious, I know. So I'll say, you know, I am right in the middle of something, because that's true. When was the last time you were just lounging around?
Waiting for the press to call.
Right, yeah, just, you know, looking at the ceiling. So I say, I'm right in the middle of something, and I want to give you my full attention, so let me call you back. All truthful, all fair, take some time to think about it, because you can't take these things back. You know what? In these days of Google, you talk to a small paper in a rural area, it's online. Anyone, any of your customers all over the world can pick that up, and these things can live for years. So you really do want to think and make the most often of a good opportunity.
More important than ever in these days. Well, this has been great conversation. Joe, do you have something to add?
I was just making some notes as we're going through this thing, and I just have a couple of tips I just want to pass along to you. When you're soliciting questions, I learned this a long time ago, instead of saying, do you have any questions about this topic, or do you have questions, use the term, what questions do you have? And I don't know what the psychology is behind that, but you'll find you'll get twice as many questions if you say, what questions do you have, either in general or on a specific topic? Second tip is don't be scared of silence when you're speaking or when you're listening. If you want to gather your thoughts and we're giving a speech, there's nothing wrong with a few seconds of silence. Don't feel that you have to fill the airwaves. And sometimes when you feel you do, you're filling the airwaves with gobbledygook that's not particularly significant and may get you off track. So don't be afraid of silence. Another one, tip, don't be afraid of repetition. Repeating the most important parts of the message you want to deliver are very important. The old experts tell you that you can remember 10% of what you hear a week later. So if you want to say something, you want people to really remember it, you got to say it 10 times. And finally, I'll just tell you about the two worst speeches I ever gave were times I was given topics to talk about that I'm not particularly knowledgeable about. And so I would advise you don't ever get in a situation where somebody wants you to talk about baseball when you're a football player. You're just going to wind up in trouble. So don't let yourself get put into those situations. Okay. Let's move on here to some questions. Do we have any questions over the Internet, or we have questions directly? And what are they pushed?
Star 7.
It's star 7, and we'd be happy to answer your questions. Who has the first question?
What questions do you have?
What questions do you have?
That's a good one, Jim.
This is always, nobody wants to be the first question.
Hi, this is Kim. Can you hear me?
Yes, Kim. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. These have been great. I have noticed in many of the political speeches that are given these days that they seem to have taken to heart the part about keeping to key points. And they're not really answering questions a lot of times. So is there some technique that can really help us to avoid taking that position? I mean, where every answer to the question is the same point, and I'm sure everybody else has noticed it. That has turned me off from presentations by speakers, and so I'm wondering if there's a way to keep to the point without it sounding like you're under oath and just keep citing the fifth of taking the fifth on things.
No, I think sincerity is huge. People often say, I hear this so often in media training, they say, well, I just need to do what the politicians do. And I always say, no.
No.
You really don't.
You really don't. I mean, we need to address the question and listen to the question. And sometimes I'll get, every now and then, and I'll be working with a group and someone will just literally just repeat what they're saying over and over. And I'll go, you know, that is not in a place. So we need to be responsive. But the difference is you really have to think about the question and think, where does this go? Can I be responsive to the question without going down a path that I didn't intend to go?
And if you don't know the answer to the question, be frank about that. I do not know the answer to that question, but if you give me your card, I will get back to you later on. Don't try to fabricate an answer to a question which you're not knowledgeable about.
I think another thing, too, is questions, and I'm thinking more of executive presentations here. You know, people are going to ask questions about problems. They're going to bring up the negative stuff, as they should. You know, we're worried about this. Why is this behind schedule and over budget? We need to acknowledge the problem. Yes, that's a problem. But we also need to go to the solution, because if we just answer their question, it's always focused on the problem.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Next question.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Paris. I have a question about presenting as far as your voice. I'm told almost every day, you know, people commenting on how soft my voice is, but I actually really do enjoy presenting. I taught etiquette classes for a while, and I was just wondering if you had any tips on how to maybe make my voice stronger or how to practice maybe making my voice sound deeper.
The most important thing you can do to project a little better is to have plenty of air. Think about speaking to the back wall of the room that you're in and try to take in enough air and project to that point, and I think it will make you be a little bit more, it will make your voice a little bit louder. I have a particularly loud voice, so I don't usually have a problem with that, but in our classes, a lot of times we'll have people that you can hardly hear. They speak so softly that you can hardly hear them. So if you have a friend in the audience that can also give you a signal that you need to speak a little louder, we do that for each other here. We do that mm-hmm. for speaking loudly. We also do that for slowing down if we get going too fast. If you've got a friend in the audience, they can help you with some of those things. But take in plenty of air, air support.
Some of that goes back to how we're standing. Look and see what you are doing with your hands. Sometimes I will look at a videotape of someone, and the videotape just shows them from the shoulders up. And I was not in the room when they were presenting, and looking at the video, I cannot see their hands. I can tell by their voice what they are doing with their hands. I'll say, your hands are folded in front, aren't they? If you stand up, low open gestures, even when you're practicing, exaggerate it. Big gestures.
Over the top.
Over the top. Your voice will elaborate. And I do that a lot. If folks are on conference calls or doing webinars like this, use your hands. So try that almost too much, and you'll see a big difference. And then you can moderate the hands.
Right.
And but it's a tool.
And, Paris, I like to say to people, if it feels like it is over the top for you, if it feels like it's just way too much, it's probably just about right for the audience.
I want to hitchhike on that with another tip. A lot of us tend to speak much too fast, particularly when we're making a presentation on to important people. And
I heard
speaking to a big group, my wife would be on the front row, and she'd look me right in the eye, and she'd give me one of these gestures like, slow down. And it made a big difference. So always have a friend in the audience that can speed you up, slow you down, or make you speak loud.
Thank you, Paris.
Thank you.
We have one over the web, and the question is, are there any different guidelines for presenting a PowerPoint with spreadsheets? And my first reaction is don't. But is there anything else you would say about that?
You know, this comes up a lot. It's a great question. Your audience should be able to read it.
Right.
In a perfect world, and I know this gets into time, is that we don't put the spreadsheet up, but we just put up something that shows the high points. So by simply glancing at it, I can see what the key points are. I remember working with a hospital administrator who was doing this sort of presentation once a week. And his big takeaway after we worked together is he's like, I just need to, when I put it up, they don't need to see all these numbers because they can't read them. Just put up a graph that shows a line. I loved when I heard Joe do a presentation, and he put up a graph. It was pretty simple, and he goes, you see how that line's going up and to the right? That's good. We're making more money.
We used to call it communication at a glance, and it really is. If you've got a graph, or you can do it with a picture so that I don't even have to read anything or think about anything, it's so much better than all that narrative or all those numbers up there.
And if they need the numbers, they could maybe you could hand it out at that point and walk them through it, and they can look at it and take notes.
Thank you.
Next question.
Hi, this is Cindy.
Hi, Cindy.
A question. Hi, could you please make a comment in reference to the importance of eye contact?
The rule of thumb is maintain eye contact for complete thought. That's about 2 or 3 seconds. If we have eye contact for less than that, we're darting. You know, it's kind of like if you're ever watching a edited video, because I used to work in TV. You know, I think like TV, I think yeah. video. You need to hold up a shot for at least 2 seconds. 3 seconds is better. 5 seconds is too long. So we look at someone for 5 seconds. I'm looking at Mary right now, and it's getting a little creepy because yeah. it's getting longer yeah. and longer and longer. But then if I start darting around yeah. the room, it makes you anxious.
Right.
So try to maintain eye contact for a complete thought. If you're nervous, focus on the friendly people, those smiling, happy listeners. Don't worry about the grumpy ones or the people who are just more stone-faced. And try to divide the room into like three and make sure you're hitting every third. And does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thanks.
We have one more from the Internet. How do you calm your nerves prior to a presentation in front of other executives?
A shot of Jack.
I have another question. Hello? Hello? Hello?
I think you like the rest of us. We can't hear them.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I thought it was my phone.
Well, you're not alone.
Well, then maybe I'll ask the group a question if anybody else can hear. Are there any other software packages that are good for presentations other than PowerPoint for kind of the non-technically advanced?
VI.
Prezi?
Prezi? Oh, I have heard of that.
Yeah. It's actually a web interface, and there can be a free subscription to it where there's lots of templates that you can use, and then if you want to be able to save and be a little more robust with it, there can be a paid subscription as well.
Thank you. That was great.
Welcome.
Bummer. I'm really sorry that we're not hearing them.
Well,
and
that they don't know.
And they may be listening to us.
Hey, does somebody send them an online question and tell them that we can't hear them?
Sure, we can do that. Well, we were going to ask, they told us to not end on a down note, and we chuckled thinking that thank you for your time wasn't really down. Does anyone have a suggestion on what an up note would be if that's considered a down note?
I would say thank you for your time, and let's do this again or something like that. If it's I was thinking about a presentation I did recently to the family of our participants, and so something that tells them that you're going to continue to talk to them or there'll be some sort of follow-up maybe.
Okay, thank you.
Question I was going to ask the group, I'll ask you guys this. The company I work for, we live in the culture of where people feel it's necessary to use a lot of animation in their PowerPoint.
Because they can?
Yeah, I think that's a demonstration of superiority, but and not being one of those people. How do you all feel about it? What's your take on people that have lots of Pac-Men moving around all over the place and things like that?
I would guess that it undermines what they're saying because it's distracting. Unless it's really, I mean, if they're talking about animation and here's what it can do, then maybe that's a good use of it. But when there's too much on a slide in general, I think it's hard for people to follow on, and it causes them to focus in on trying to visually get what's happening as opposed to listening what someone's saying.
One thing, too, that I've run into is when I'm the presenter of a group project where somebody's inserted a lot of that stuff, you have to keep clicking the mouse to get the animation to fire.
Oh, God.
The moderator has left the conference.
Hello, conference. I know there are a few of you still back on there. This is Joe Scarlett. Our Comcast connection went dead. All our phones went down, and the internet went down, and it just came back up. So we apologize for the blackout, but for those of you that are still there, we're still here to answer questions. So hit star 7, and we'd love to hear from you.
Okay. All sorts of.
They're all gone?
Which was the one you didn't have? I have a bad habit of saying a lot during my presentations.
How do I get out of that habit?
I have a bad habit of saying in the middle of my presentations. How do we get out of that?
Oh, I get that question all the time. I love that question. Is a vocalized pause. We say when we meant to say nothing at all. So it's actually fairly easy to fix. It's a question of focusing on it. And when you find yourself wanting to say just stop. Just try to focus on just silence. It's okay to have a brief period of silence. Focus on it when you're talking to people, just wherever, not even in a presentation. Other things, you guys, I hear sometimes, is another one. But just focus on just stopping and pausing. Practicing aloud will also help. Now,
silence is golden. Sometimes.
There's a technical difficulty with the conference call line, which brings up another question of the best way to deal with this. In a presentation.
I have had every horrible thing happen to me. I can think of two times I've been doing speeches, big rooms of people, and the power has gone out. two things. Minor technical difficulties. The AV won't work. The mic doesn't, little stuff like that. The main thing is not to panic. The audience gets anxious if you get anxious. It's like a small child. I think in my son's first grade class, one of the kids was sick on the day to do the speaking aloud, and so they gave my son his part. And my son just saw it, and so he gets up there, and he's halfway through, and he forgets it. And you think, oh, my gosh, he's going to burst into tears, and all the parents are all anxious because you're afraid the kid's going to cry. Instead, he turns to the child next to him, asks him what it is, turns back, smiles, and goes on. No one remembered it because he didn't cry. It's the same thing. Just be calm. Take a break. Move on. Always be prepared to do things without AV.
And add humor if you can.
But if your connection is lost, that's a little bit of a different situation. And it can happen on a conference call. So any thoughts about that?
I think what you all were doing is looking for another way to communicate with people. And here we didn't have email either. But these things will happen.
Before we got cut off, you were about to address how do you calm your nerves prior to a presentation in front of other executives. And the last thing people heard was take a shot of Jack Daniels.
Oh, no, you didn't hear the answer.
I hope everybody realizes that was a joke.
I love it. Okay. I think what we said after that was what I find most helpful, two things. Practice aloud. It's like doing a live shot, live television. Practice aloud. The words will just come. Know that first 30 to 60 seconds. And make sure you're saying something that sounds comfortable. Connect with your audience. Like, hey, I know that one of hey might not be appropriate. But, I understand that a strategic objective of the company is X. Again, this is board. This is senior level. So, and then tie your topic into that. So you are speaking to them. So confidence in what you're saying and practice. The second thing is, if you can, say hello to people, as Joe said, ahead of time. Shake hands, introduce yourself, make a contact.
Friend,
yes.
And make eye contact with people that are smiling. Okay. With that, we want to thank you all for joining us. We apologize for the breakup of the communication, and we're unable to prepare that quickly enough. But thanks for joining us, and again, we'll look forward to seeing you on February 13th when we're going to talk about strategic planning, and we're going to have Andy Bailey with us. Thank you all very much, and have a great Groundhog's Day next month. Bye bye.